Our third case for argument this morning is United States against Killingsworth. Mr. Lyons.
May it please the court, I'm here this morning because the government is seeking to appeal the district court's dismissal of the indictment of this case with prejudice. That order arose out of a conceded Speedy Trial Act violation, and it resulted in the defendant not being tried within the 70 days as prescribed by the Speedy Trial Act. It is our position that this court, in applying Taylor's abusive guided discretion standard, that when you analyze the 3162 factors that the district court had to analyze, that the order in this case dismissing the indictment with prejudice was an error, and we ask this court to reverse.
Mr. Likens, I have a question for you. There are, in many of these cases, and I think here as well, a little bit of sentencing appeals too, kind of two approaches that you might take, and they're not exclusive, but one of them is, did the district court give an adequate explanation for what it thought about each of the relevant things it was supposed to think about? So in this instance, the 3162 criteria. And you could see how adequate the explanation was. And the second question really is, did the district court come to the correct result substantively? Maybe you have a fabulous discussion that goes on for 50 pages and everything is exhaustively reviewed, but then at the end of the day you think that the outcome was wrong. I'm not clear whether you're really focusing more on the explanation or whether each of these things are concerns of yours.
I believe that's the case. And I wasn't the counsel below, but in reviewing the record and in reviewing what happened, it struck me that the explanation for the dismissal with prejudice, I think it took up less than a page of the transcript. And these are three serious factors that needed to be analyzed by the district court, I would submit.
Because here's my problem with your position is this. Taylor, as I read it, says that there is no presumption one way or the other under the Speedy Trial Act that dismissal should either be with prejudice or without prejudice. It's a question committed to the discretion of the district court judge. And we review by looking at whether the judge abused his discretion with whatever materials we can find from the record. You even have the later case, more recently, not quite on the same point, in Zedner from the Supreme Court, where the court happens to mention at one point one of the reasons why you might dismiss with prejudice is to give the prosecution a powerful incentive to be careful about complying with the statute. That's almost a direct quote from Zedner. So I'm not sure how, sitting here without either the government arguing that there, in fact, should be a presumption to dismiss without prejudice, or without you're almost telling us that we should be conducting a de novo review of this, I don't see how on this record we can say that there's an abuse of discretion.
I guess what I would say in response to, well, first let me start with Zedner, that to the extent Zedner made that point, it really wasn't in the concrete context that Taylor presents the Speedy Trial Act issues.
No, I know that the question is a little bit different in Zedner, but you can't read the Supreme Court as irrelevant when it's discussing the very statute that's before you.
And I guess the point I was trying to make is that's only one of the factors that the one Zedner identifies is only one of the factors that 3162 mm-hmm. counsels courts to take into consideration. And we're not saying that it shouldn't be a consideration. But Taylor really sets forth the statutory framework which the district court had to follow and which this court has to follow.
And why didn't it follow that? Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If you were going to assign some fault here for this case, falling through the cracks, I think it's more the U.S. Attorney's Office problem or the magistrate and the district judge. On the docket with
I think the United States has an obligation to see that the provisions of the Speedy Trial Act are followed, and to the extent I believe the counsel who handled this was trying to explain to the court why things happened. He was not trying to say And in fact, we have concrete procedures.
I thought that there were a couple of communications, either to the magistrate judge or something, about we got to do something with this case.
In effect. Yes, the district court did not make a concrete ruling on that factual issue. The district court made a factual inquiry and then came out and said, I'm really not going to decide that issue. I believe the district court did, however, find that there were attempts made by defense counsel to get it set for an arraignment. So I guess in answer to your question, the magistrate court did have some responsibility for not setting this for an arraignment according to the district court's factual finding that the defense counsel had made an effort to get it set for an arraignment. Back to your other question, the United States does not shirk our responsibilities to see that the Speedy Trial Act is carried out, and in fact, we have made that clear to the attorneys in our office that, as an initial matter, it is their responsibility to see that arraignments are set up and to see that the provisions of the Speedy Trial Act are complied with.
Whatever happened to the state charge?
I believe were dismissed, or I don't even know if state charges were ever filed. There was a discussion by the district court, and perhaps defense counsel could enlighten us on that. There was a discussion that perhaps state charges could be filed, but I'm not sure whether they were or not. But getting back to the question that was raised about the Taylor analysis, in your question, which I think is the pertinent question here, is what is it that the district court should have done differently that would entitle us to the relief we're asking for here? Taylor makes clear that while the judge has discretion on whether to dismiss with or without prejudice, it's not unlimited discretion. And in reading Taylor, it almost reads like it's a modified form of an abuse of discretion standard, because they says it's a guided analysis that the district court must undergo with respect to all of the 3162 factors.
I know that, but then you have Fountain, where we said, it's appropriate to have deferential review when the statute prescribes methods. You have these factors that are unweighted, and I have to say I'm a little bit surprised that the Solicitor General decided to let this appeal go forward, because it's hard for me to see, aside from maybe disagreeing with one particular judge because our gut reaction about drug dealers who carry guns is a little different than somebody else's, even though all these other problems were there. What are we going to contribute to this that's consistent with Taylor, that's consistent with Zedner, that's consistent with what the Supreme Court has told us?
Well, in looking at the Taylor factors, the one that jumped out to me in reviewing this case was this court and other courts have held that in making the decision of whether or not to dismiss with or without prejudice, you dismiss with prejudice only in cases where the length of the delay is as serious as the violation itself. And one of the things that jumped out at me in this case was that the delay in this case, I think 4 days had elapsed on a speedy.
Well, I know that's when he moved. I actually take that as a sign of diligence on the part of defense counsel, because if he'd sat on it and let it just drift for another 8 or 9 months, then according to your logic, he would have had a stronger case for dismissal with prejudice. But it doesn't seem to me like the right way to run a railroad. It seems like, defense counsel's keeping track. His client has an absolute right under the statute. He moves right away as soon as the clock is over, and I just don't see in the statute. You may be proposing a very sensible rule where somehow that would be a good metric, but the statute has just kind of all these factors, and I don't know where we find your rule in it.
I guess I would answer that there is a great deal of cases analyzing the Taylor factors, maybe not, I shouldn't even call them the Taylor factors, the 3162
statutory
factors.
The statutory list. Factors. Yeah.
And if you look at those cases, that all courts consider a dismissal with prejudice the most serious sanction that can be imposed. And the argument I would make to you today is that in the context of this case, on a review of the record, on a review of the way the court analyzed the 3162 factors, that was too serious of a sanction in this case. The violation was inadvertent. There was no prejudice shown, no prejudice alleged to the defendant. And I say I'm out of time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Liggins. Mr. Trentman.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Brian Trentman. I'm here on behalf of Abraham Killingsworth. I just wanted to kind of, if I could, address some of the concerns that I heard raised this morning. One was the question about whether or not the government's concern was one of the court having an adequate explanation or whether or not they were concerned with whether or not the correct result had been reached. With respect to an adequate explanation, I kind of hinted in my brief that if there are questions about what the court had done and what weight he had given to the factors under 3162, potentially there could be a remand, but really, it's not going to change that this is a serious case, a serious offense, and we have conceded that all along. And that factor, we've always given that to the government and said that would be weighted against a dismissal with prejudice. The facts and circumstances of this case, well, I guess there could be some further discovery and try to find out exactly what happened, but it doesn't change that.
Counsel, let me ask why the approach in criminal cases shouldn't be similar to the approach in civil cases. This is fundamentally a dismissal for lack of prosecution, where the statute says you've got 70 days to prosecute. And we've said repeatedly in civil cases that the case should be dismissed as with prejudice, gone, generally only if there's some flouting of the rules or if there's some prejudice to the opposing party. And here it doesn't seem as if you're arguing, the district court didn't find that the prosecutor was flouting the rules, and no one is arguing any prejudice. So shouldn't one say, on the general rule that the punishment should fit the crime, that dismissal with prejudice seems out of line?
Well, I think that's a good point, other than I would draw this distinction in the analogy. And that is, there's a factor for the court to consider. It's actually twofold, administration of justice and administration of, quote, this chapter. In a civil case, if a court entered an order dismissing it with prejudice, that's it. It's done. It's for over. It's done forever. In this case, I still think that justice can be administered. The administration of justice can be advanced if the state court decides to proceed.
I don't think the possibility that somebody else will sue ever plays a role here. That's not a question under the statute. Is that listed as a factor?
Well, administration of justice is, and I think justice isn't a party. I think justice is a concept.
No, the administration of justice in the federal courts. Whether the International Criminal Court might be able to bring charges shouldn't be important.
I believe the language of the statute is administration of justice. And the other factor is the administration of the chapter.
Let me ask you this. We're talking about the Speedy Trial Act. And as I look at this case, I don't think there ever was going to be a trial here.
Well, my client was sitting
in jail. Sure doesn't look like it. He gave a proffer. He admitted it.
No, there was no proffer.
We met for a proffer.
That's correct. We met for a proffer, and we met for probably 2 minutes.
But he admitted the possession, didn't he?
He admitted that he had taken the dope from the dope dealer.
I mean, it's just hard for me to look at this as someone who handled these cases in the district court. I think that we were ever going to impanel a jury and try this case.
But I think from
a practical standpoint.
I agree, and I think that cuts against the government, though. The government has an obligation under our local rules to notify the judge in writing when there's 25 days left on the clock. And there's no indication that they did that. So if they're having a problem with a magistrate judge getting an arraignment sent, the defense attorney saying, when are you going to arraign my client? If they're having problems with the magistrate judge, our local rules provide they should be telling the district court judge in writing, there's only 25 days left on the clock. And that's never done. That's not done in this case. I can't say that it's never done. I don't know how often it's done. But it was not done. And I think if the language of administration of this chapter is to mean anything, then the fact that the district court set forth a plan that the people who worked on that plan spent a great deal of time to try to see that speedy trial rights would be would be honored and protected. And that plan doesn't say it's going to be dismissed with prejudice. It says it's going to be left up to the court to decide whether it should be with or without prejudice. But if that plan's to have any meaning whatsoever, if the government has an obligation to let the court know when there's 25 days left on the clock in writing, if they don't do so, that ought to be a factor that militates in favor of being dismissed with prejudice. I think I kind of alluded to one of the other points that had been raised during the government's presentation, that was whatever happened to state court. State court never filed charges. He was immediately turned over to federal prosecutors. There's a 5-year statute of limitations if the state of Illinois sees fit. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Where is he now?
I believe that he is right now waiting to see what's going to happen.
Is he in custody or is he?
He's no longer in custody. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under...